now, this day fortnight, we will know the identity of our next president. Already we know that the 10th president will be a woman and that it will be either Catherine Connolly or Heather Humphreys, both of whom are here in the This Week studio for a head-to-head debate. Before we hear from them, though, our reporter Ethna Dodd sets the scene by looking back at the contest so far.
There's a definite autumnal feel in the air, and with it, the whiff of an election.
Despite picking up nominations from Kerry and Tipperary County Councils along the way, Gareth Sheridan today ran out of road.
For Maria Steen, today marked the end of the road for her efforts.
Rarely has the political consensus seemed more oppressive or detached from the wishes and desires of the public.
Politics marches on. We've got three candidates, 30 days of campaigning, and it's going to be grueling.
But for one candidate, there were questions about her attendance at another gathering a decade ago, Heather Humphreys described as a picnic rather than an orange march.
I've spent my life trying to bring people together. Those preconceived notions, they have to be stopped. There's a lot of people come to that event, and you know, I'd love to bring you myself.
A mass I have utterly condemned over and over.
But I'm asking you this morning why you would say Hamas is part of the fabric of the Palestinian.
I'll try and answer that for you as best I can.
If it happened, I'm very sorry that it happened. I really am. As I said, Anya, it was over 16 years ago. Very stressful time for the family. I'm looking into it.
Last night, there were three candidates in the race for the presidency. This morning, there are two. The Fianna Fáil candidate, Jim Gavin, dramatically announced his withdrawal from the contest.
Micheál Martin, the leader of Fianna Fáil, you messed up in picking Jim Gavin, didn't you?
This is a tough day for us, as a party. It's not something I anticipated or wanted.
We've come to a juncture where people now have a clear choice to make.
Indeed.
Do we want more of the same, or do we want a president with courage, with integrity?
Do you want a president that's going to represent this country on the world stage? Do you want a president that hasn't fallen out with or insulted our allies?
Those allegations are scurrilous.
No, they're not scurrilous, Catherine.
That montage compiled by Ethna Dodd. And as I said, the two remaining candidates join me now in studio, Independent Catherine Connolly and Fine Gael's Heather Humphreys. You are both very welcome indeed. Thank you for taking the time. I know you're very busy, to put it mildly. And this is a debate between you, a chance to tell the voters why each of you think you should be our next president. And I am hoping that I will have to intervene very little and that you'll do most of the talking. So I'm going to start with the most dramatic moment of the campaign to date, I think, was probably the withdrawal of Jim Gavin on this day last week, a surprise to everyone, which means that there is a chunk of votes out there, Fianna Fáil votes, which could prove crucial in the end. I'm going to ask you both the same question. I'll start with you, Catherine. Why should those Fianna Fáil voters, supporters, why should they give you their number one vote?
I think it's very important what's happened, and there's a choice now before the electorate, and there's a very specific choice before Fianna Fáil members. And I think the leadership of Fianna Fáil have made it very clear that there's now no difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and the effect that's crystallised. So there's...
Why'd you say that?
Because Micheál Martin has said he's supporting Heather, and so there's no difference in their philosophy. We all knew that for a long time, and he's actually set it out now and confirmed it. And so I'm saying to the ordinary members of Fianna Fáil, you know my track record in the Dáil, you know my history in relation to standing up for social justice, for equality, for violence against women, and in relation to the North. And I'm saying to those members, remember Frank Aiken. Remember that legacy that man did for the Fianna Fáil party and for this country. And he stood up when it was very, very difficult over a prolonged period of time in relation to pushing the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons. Mm. And he did that. And on occasions he was laughed at. And I would ask them to get in touch with the history of their party and look to the similarities between what I'm representing and what they want, as I've done with the other parties and with non-party members.
So you're saying you represent Fianna Fáil values better than some others do?
I'm asking the members to make... I have the greatest respect for the electorate, and I'm asking them to make up their own mind and look at what I'm standing for. And they don't have to agree with everything, as is the case with the other parties.
OK. Heather Humphreys, I'll put the same question to you. I mean, you sat at the Cabinet table with Fianna Fáil, obviously. Why should they vote for you?
Well, I'm a centre-ground, pro-European, pro-business, common sense person. And I bring a lot of experience to this job. I've worked with many parties over the years. I've worked with the Labour Party, the Green Party. I've worked with Independents. I've worked with Fianna Fáil and I've worked with Fine Gael. I have a track record of representing Ireland both diplomatically and culturally. And I certainly will bring the presidency to another level in terms of opening doors for Irish businesses, because we need to obviously get markets so that we protect our jobs at home and create new jobs. So as I said, I have a lot of experience. I want to bring unity to this country. We live in a divided society and it can be very divisive, and I feel that I have the experience of bringing people together, of sitting down and having those hard conversations and breaking down barriers and building bridges.
But specifically to those Fianna Fáil supporters, I mean, there's a lot of Fianna Fáil TDs and ministers quoted in the newspapers today saying they're going to vote for Jim Gavin anyway, even though he's withdrawn. Still have a ballot paper, obviously.
Yeah, well, if they want to vote for Jim Gavin, I would ask them to give me their number two, please, because they would, you know, they want to make their vote work for them, and I think it's important that they do that.
Okay, and I'm sure Catherine Connolly would look for the number any number twos that are going as
if
well.
If I could come back, David, just sure. In relation to what Heather is saying about pro-business and pro-Europe, and obviously there's an implication that I'm not pro-business or pro-Europe, and absolutely the opposite is correct. I have been pro-business all my life. My father was a qualified plasterer and then became a small builder. I fully understand the business side. Let me just stay with this.
But you voted against every European treaty, Catherine.
That's absolutely wrong. If I could just for a moment. I'm pro-business, absolutely. I have repeatedly stood up in the Dáil for a diversification in relation to our economy, because we have always put our eggs in one basket. I've repeated, the government are now beginning to look at the diversification.
I just want
to correct what's been said in relation to Indigenous industries. I have never stopped asking for a policy in relation to Indigenous industries in Ireland. I've repeatedly asked for diversification. I'm glad the government is doing it now, but they're simply doing it now as a result of what has happened with Trump and tariffs. Yeah. In relation to Europe, I'm absolutely pro-European, asking questions of the military-industrial complex and the direction that the compass is going in Europe. It's not the same as anti-European. It actually, I'm a committed European, and a committed European asks questions.
Okay, let's have their own face come back on that.
Well, Catherine, you've managed to insult our allies. You've insulted Germany, you've insulted France, you've insulted the UK, our nearest neighbour, you've insulted the US. So you can't, that doesn't go without consequences. If you're a president of this country, you have to meet other leaders and other heads of state. And how are you going to speak to them? How are you going to talk to them? Or will they want to talk to you if you have insulted them? And you did say another thing there, Catherine, and I'd like to just mention this as well. You said that you've always stood up for women. Now, one of your cheerleaders is Paul Murphy, and he certainly didn't stand up for women when he locked Joan Burton in her car.
Can I stop you there, Heather Humphreys? Now, he would dispute that.
Well, he was part of it. He was there. He terrified her. He kept her trapped in her car.
Well, he would dispute whether he was responsible for that, in fairness.
Well, what I want to say is, well, do you agree with what Paul Murphy did to Joan Burton?
This is a presidential election, and I'm standing as a candidate to represent the people of Ireland and the values that they hold dear.
But there was a question posed to you there.
There were so many things said there that I've insulted people. I don't recall ever insulting anybody in my life. What I did say... In the context of genocide, I said that I didn't trust three countries that I mentioned because of the arms industry.
America, England and France, I think it was.
That's right. Yeah. And I said that in a context of genocide, which the people of Ireland are horrified by, and the normalisation...
We're all horrified by genocide in Gaza.
I won't interrupt you, Heather, if you could let me just answer, because you're saying very serious things here that are inaccurate.
No. Okay,
they are inaccurate. I'm absolutely a committed European. There are different aspects to what I've said in my life, and that is, I question. And I would encourage a lot more people to question. It's the essence of democracy. And particularly now at this juncture where we're heading in one direction, a build-up internationally of the arms industry, okay, who are making obscene profits.
Let Heather Humphreys come back in there.
Yeah, Catherine, you compared Germany today to Nazi Germany. And if it were not for the support that Germany has given the Ukrainian people to protect them against anti-drone missiles and other such equipment, there would be a lot more people dead in Ukraine as we speak. As you well know, the aggressor here is Putin. Now, I have never heard you condemning Russia, and I haven't, you know, but what I can say is Putin has brought war back to Europe. There's no question about that. And we have to defend ourselves. We're living in a different world. We can't be, we can't just talk our way out of it. Putin doesn't want to talk to anybody. He won't talk to Zelensky. And he wants to continue the aggression.
OK, well, can I put that to Catherine Connolly? Because I have heard you condemn the Russian invasion, but I haven't heard you clarify. Do you think Russia should withdraw from all of the territory in Ukraine that is occupied?
Let's just, please, because things are being, allegations are being made here.
And I'm giving you an opportunity
please,
to answer.
I'm on record repeatedly for condemning Russia. If I could now, I didn't interrupt you. Repeatedly condemning Russia. What I have done is pointed out that as a neutral country, and if we want to maintain our credibility, then we must question truth to power in relation to other countries. Over and over is what I've pointed out. I have never hesitated ever in my condemnation of Russia. We're now looking at a peace agreement between Israel and Palestine.
Yeah, I want to get on to that.
I'm not going into it. I'm simply pointing out that Israel has committed genocide in Palestine, and they are now sitting down with a peace agreement, phase one, and I hope it works out. I certainly hope with every fibre of my being that it works out. But that we're now sitting with the country that committed genocide. So I would hope that we would have a peace agreement in relation to the Ukraine. Absolutely. Yeah.
Would that involve Russia withdrawing from the territories occupied since 2014?
I would hope that they will withdraw. I would hope, but it'll be part of a peace agreement that has to be negotiated. Obviously, you can't invade a sovereign country, but at some stage, sense has to prevail, and we must look at a peace agreement like we are doing with Israel and Palestine
moment. Let Heather Humphreys come back in on that.
Well, what we see here in terms of Russia is they attacked a sovereign state. They attacked Ukraine. In fairness, as the Irish people have given huge support to the Ukrainian people. But Catherine, you don't speak out in the same way against Russia as you do against other countries. You really don't. And then we have, you align yourself with Mick Wallace. You align yourself with Ms. Daly, these are the people that have spoken out against Europe. These are the people who are supporting you. Paul Murphy, far left wing politician. So these are the people, Claire Daly, far left, Mick Wallace, far left. These are the people you associate with, Catherine. I'm a centre ground politician. I work with people. I speak to ministers in other countries. I sat at ministerial councils in the EU. I spoke to ministers in Latvia, in Lithuania, in Finland. There is a real fear out there that whenever Russia is finished with Ukraine, it's only a matter of time before they move on to the next neighbours. That's Finland. They are now part of the UN because of the real fear that's out there. We're living in a changing world.
Okay, well, let Catherine Connolly come back in there.
Now we have the politics of fear, as advocated by Ivan Yates. And we have a blatant example of it here.
I'm going to get on to Ivan Yates in a moment.
The politics of fear. I didn't interrupt at any stage. So I'm going to answer this. I haven't interrupted, and you've offered to let us speak. This is the politics of fear, and allegations being made that are utterly without substance. Earlier on, as I waited for this, I heard my colleague in Galway West talk about, do you want a president when you wake up in the morning to be asking the question, who has she now attacked? Or do you want a president you can trust? So building on what Ivan Yates has said, here we have the politics of fear building up by association, as opposed to a substantive debate on what a president is about, what values they represent, what the people of Ireland want to see in a president. We have the politics of smear, of making allegations that are unfounded without having any substantive debate on the issues.
Now, can I put that to Heather Humphreys? I think Catherine has said that Ivan Yates did her a favour on his podcast by saying that if he was advising Fine Gael, he would tell them to smear the bejesus out of the other candidate. Isn't that exactly what your party is doing?
Because
Catherine. No, that's very bad.
Only once, and I apologise.
I'll put this to you, Heather Humphreys. I took a look at the Fine Gael website earlier on, and there's four statements attacking Catherine Connolly, and then there's a whole load of stuff about the budget, and there isn't any saying vote for Heather. For a positive reason for voting for Heather. Well, so isn't that exactly what Fine Gael is doing?
Well, Catherine has legitimate questions that she has to answer, and I have questions I'll answer happily too. Ivan Yates has nothing to do with my campaign. He's a commentator and I can't be held responsible for what he thinks or what he says. And I would say that Ivan Yates has about as much to do with my campaign as Joe Brawley has to do with Catherine's campaign. He has absolutely nothing to do with it. I don't even listen to his show, to be honest with you, and I'm not going to take his advice.
OK. Have you done anything to ask your colleagues not to launch negative attacks against Catherine Connolly?
Well, these are legitimate questions they've asked Catherine Connolly. Catherine here, and we all know this, she brought a member of Éireagh into the Dáil, I'd like to ask Catherine, did she ask that person what she was going to use the guns for? The member of Éireagh who was convicted by the Special Criminal Court. I'd like to ask that question, and that's a fair question.
Okay.
Like that you're quite, she was brought into to Dáil Éireann without Garda approval, and we all know you have to have your staff vetted. This didn't happen, and that's just one question. And the other question I'd like to ask Catherine is when she went to Syria with Mick Wallace and Catherine Daly, you said a number of times you paid for the trip yourself. Now we find out that you used 3,500 of taxpayers' money to pay for the trip.
Okay, 2 points to Catherine Connolly, and I'll give you a chance to respond to both of them.
What was the first one?
The first one was whether you checked with the lady you employed with Éireagh.
See, allegations are being made again that I broke the rules or that the vetting has to be done before the person comes in. That's not accurate. And so I'm really upset that this person's privacy has been absolutely trespassed upon for the purposes of trying to damage me. I believe it has backfired. But let me answer the question again and again. I implied that person. I brought her into the Dáil. She was absolutely perfectly qualified for what I wanted, which was an advisor in relation to the Irish language. And she had started her PhD in prison. Mm. She had served her prison term. She came into the Dáil. The application form was filled out. All details were in that. And I signed her in every day, is what TDs do. And I signed her in the morning and out in the evening. We could get the facts out. And it was actually inconvenient for me because it tied me down. But there were the rules and I complied with them.
Did you ever wonder why the clearance wasn't forthcoming?
Absolutely. And I sent an email and asked the process when, because to the effect, this is a little awkward that this is continuing. But that's what the process did. And it took that long. And
but the Gardaí wouldn't give her clearance, Catherine. That's very obvious.
We know nothing about this because this is a private matter. What we do know about it is that stories have appeared in the paper from unnamed sources saying that I spoke with the guards. I never did. That I had an appeal process. I never had.
Okay, well, that allegation wasn't raised here.
Just one question, Catherine. Did you ask her what she used the guns for?
This is a woman who served her term in prison. This is a success story.
This is a woman who's a member of Éireagh
Can I put a question to Heather Humphreys? Do you believe people can be rehabilitated?
Yeah, I do believe they can be rehabilitated. But I don't believe that somebody who was a member of Éireagh who did not go through the Garda vetting process to get to work in Dáil Éireann should have been admitted to our national parliament.
Okay.
She was a risk. There's no doubt about that. And the same thing goes back to the question question about would I employ a rapist in Áras an Uachtaráin. No, I would not. And you see that the Rape Crisis Centre is out today saying that if women encounter the perpetrator of violence against them, it re-traumatises them. How would some woman feel if we had a rapist employed in Áras an Uachtaráin?
Let me put that question to Cathy Connolly, because you know, this goes to the question of judgment. It's not, the issue is not particularly relevant to the presidential election, but what is relevant is both of your judgments and your characters, and I think that that's accepted. There is a perception that it took you 24 hours to answer that question about whether you'd employ a rapist.
It's not accurate. That's not accurate. My record is second to none in standing up for violence against women. I have pushed since the day I was elected in 2016, first to have the Savvy report, the seminal report on women, reviewed. That took almost, I think, 20 years. Let me say, on top of that, I've pushed for a strategy, the third national, and so on.
Yes.
In relation to this specific question, it was in relation to rehabilitation that I was reflecting on, the rehabilitation. And the question was being put, and legitimately, maybe I didn't like the way it was being put, but legitimately put in relation to, if you believe in rehabilitation, what does that mean? And so my body absolutely reacted against rape and rapist, given my own background and standing up. I reacted in terms of, oh my God, who would employ a person that has committed rape? And that was my emotional reaction immediately. And the actual reflection was, what does rehabilitation mean? Quite clearly, I would not employ somebody who had committed rape. Quite clearly, they would come out of prison and be on as sex offenders. So do we want a society where someone is allowed to reflect on what rehabilitation means, and whether somebody, where there's a question of...
Okay.
Yeah, well, I think...
I'm going to give you a quick...
Just to say, you know, part of rehabilitation is accepting that you made a mistake, that you did wrong. That particular woman who's a member of IRA...
Well, she's not here to defend herself.
Yeah, I know, but let's face it, the person, she pleaded not guilty.
We're going
she
back.
Pleaded not guilty in the
we're
court.
We're going back over and over, and it's allowed to go back over on a person who shouldn't be drawn into this at all.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut across you there, but hold on to those thoughts, because we'll be back after this short break. You're welcome back to This Week. We are joined in studio by the two remaining presidential candidates, Heather Humphreys and Cathryn Connolly, who are debating the issues. Let's talk about the presidency and its role in Irish life. I think it's fair to say that Michael D. Higgins has stretched the limits of the office, sometimes ventured into territory that suggests opposition to government policy. Heather Humphreys, you were at the receiving end of some of that. Do you approve of that? Do you think that's what the president should do?
Well, I think Michael D. Higgins has been an excellent president, and I supported him when he went for election the second time, and I think he has done a very good job. First and foremost, the job of the president is to protect and uphold the Constitution, and that's the number one function of the president. As for me, I want to look at a number of different areas. I want to focus on community as president. I want to support people up and down the length and breadth of this country in terms of the volunteers and what they do to make our country a better place. I was out in a football pitch yesterday in rural Tipperary and it was great.
Were you doing keepy uppies?
No, I didn't try those. I have to give that one to Cathryn.
I'll teach you.
She's better at those than I am.
To return to the question, would you as president criticise government policy?
I will never be afraid to speak up be a voice for the people of this country, be the conscience of the nation, and where there's issues that need to be addressed, I will certainly do that. And of course the President has an opportunity to speak to the Taoiseach on a very regular basis, and sometimes conversations in the privacy of a room can be very, very effective.
Okay, but so you're saying that you would, if the need required, publicly criticise the government?
Well, I will speak up for people. I have no hesitation in doing that, absolutely none, but I am mindful that I will operate within the Constitution, because that is the primary function of the President.
And what do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I will abide by the Constitution. It is not the job of the President to get into the day-to-day running of the country, but I can speak up for people. I'll speak up for young people. Oh. I'll speak up for old people. I'm not afraid to speak up.
Okay, Cathryn Connolly, would you be afraid to speak up?
I certainly won't be afraid to speak up. And I think you need a president with courage, and you also need a president that represents people. And I've been going around the country since the end of July. And what's jumping out from every age is that people want a sense of hope, and they want the president to reflect the values that they hold dear. And within that, you look at the Constitution, and Article 12, 8 says that the president will take a public and solemn vow to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland.
It also says in Article 13 that the powers and functions conferred by on the president shall be performable only on the advice of the government.
Absolutely. And there's a balance all of the time. And I'm well used to balancing things in my life in the different roles I've been in. And I've worked as a Laskian Corla and balanced the roles and then went out as the independent TD speaking on different topics. I've been a barrister. I've been a clinical psychologist. So I'm fully aware of the complexity of different roles.
Because it is a tightrope, isn't it?
I wouldn't describe it as a tightrope, actually. The Constitution is a basic, fundamental document that we have that set out rights. I'd like to see more rights in the Constitution set out, but it does set out a framework for us. Social justice is mentioned in the Constitution, peaceful resolution of conflicts and a duty on us under the Constitution, and many, many other articles. But serving the welfare of the people of Ireland is certainly a very important...
But isn't there potentially an area of conflict with the government if you were to be critical of its policies?
The policy is decided by government. I've no doubt in relation to that. Policies I don't agree with as a TD, a housing crisis directly consequent on government policies, over 16,000 people homeless. Yeah. So there are consequences of government policies, but ultimately the people decide in elections who make the decisions and the policies. Mm. A president has a different role, and Michael Dee has spoken out. So have the other presidents before him.
Okay.
And so we want somebody in the role that has courage, that has conviction, and that is able to listen, hear and reflect.
Okay. Heather Humphreys, you say you won't be afraid to speak out to government, but you've never been in opposition. You've always been in government in all your time in the Dáil. When have you ever publicly opposed government policy?
Yeah, well, I tell you what I have. I do have courage and I do have conviction, but I also have experience. And I stepped up to the plate. I did go in and serve in government. And government is about making difficult decisions. That's what it's about. And it's much easier if you want to sit on the opposition benches and give out about everything. And that's what opposition do. They hold government to account, but they also don't have to make real decisions. I was a minister for 10 years. I headed up the 2016 commemorations, a time in our history that brought people together. There was a real sense of unity, a real sense of coming together, a sense of national identity, a sense of national pride. I was the minister that supported businesses during Brexit and during the pandemic. Not an easy time. I know how to handle a crisis.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as the public knows, you didn't oppose austerity. You apparently don't have a problem with the housing policy pursued over the last 14 years.
Now.
And you don't have a view on last week's budget.
Come here. When we came into government, construction sector, it was decimated. There was no new houses. More houses are being built now. But there's not enough houses being built. That's the problem. We need to increase supply. There's billions being invested. We need to see results. I have never objected to a housing development. Some people pontificate about housing and then they're the first ones to object.
Who do you mean by that?
Well, there's loads of people have objected to housing developments. I can tell you, I haven't objected to any housing developments.
You say you're not afraid to present your case and to challenge government if possible. I got an email yesterday from Lucia O'Farrell. You'll know, whose son Shane, a constituent of yours, was knocked down and killed by a driver who should have been in prison. And her point is that over the 14 years that she was campaigning for a state apology, which she finally got, you were her local TD for 10 years, you were in government, and you did nothing to help them.
Yeah, well, I did speak to Lucia O'Farrell back a good few years ago, and when I was finished the phone call with her, there were tears in my eyes because of what happened to her son. It was a terrible, terrible accident and she lost her son. And I'm glad that she has got a state apology. Now, I did make representations on Lucia and anybody or for Lucia on that case. Anybody that comes into my office when I was a TD, I did everything I could to help them. And I'm sorry if Lucia felt I didn't do it enough. I did make representations to the relevant ministers at the time. And as I said, I'm glad she has got a state apology.
OK. Catherine Connolly, you mentioned your opposition to the removal of the triple lock earlier. You're well known for that. And many of your supporters who are listening to us today might assume that if you're president, you'll do something to prevent that becoming law, or that being removed. Would you, for instance, would you be minded to refer legislation removing the triple lock to the Supreme Court?
First of all, let me just talk about the triple lock and then I'll answer your question. The triple lock is at the core of our neutrality. That's what the Taoiseach said. Triple lock is at the core of our neutrality. Neutrality is one of the most important policies that we have. It should be used proactively so that we can bring peace as best we can in the world. The triple lock has been there. In the Nice Treaty and the Lisbon Treaty, we gave an absolute solemn guarantee, solemn guarantees that we would not ever interfere with our neutrality. And the triple lock, according to the Taoiseach, is a core part. My role as president would be to look at every piece of legislation that comes before me for one specific purpose, to see is it in compliance with the Constitution. That would be my role. And I would look at that and take the expert advice from the Council of State and make up my mind about that. And the only option open to me would be to refer the matter to the Supreme Court for their decision and or sign it into law and let it be challenged in the future. So I can't speculate. I have no idea.
You don't know what the legislation is.
Exactly. I have no idea what the legislation
will look
like.
OK, but anybody voting for you in the hope that you as president would be able to put a stop to legislation removing the triple lock, that you're not, you won't
and
have
I've
that
explained
power.
That yeah. But what people should get is a referendum. We need a referendum on losing the triple lock. No legislation should go through the Dáil, and that's a political decision, and the power will have to come from the people to say we want a referendum because you're changing our policy of neutrality.
Okay, Heather Humphreys, what's your view on this?
Well, the triple lock currently means that you have to have a decision of government, a decision of the Oireachtas, and then we have to go and get a UN mandate to allow us to send peacekeeping forces to another country. So in other words, we have to get permission from the UN, which could mean that Russia or China or indeed the US can veto that. So that means Ireland can't send peacekeepers to other countries. And I think we're an independent country and we're a mature country. And we have the longest running democracy in any of the European countries. As well as that, I fully support our neutrality, but I think we're mature enough to make our own decisions.
OK, but a lot of people are very attached to the policy of neutrality and they might view you as representing a threat to neutrality.
No, I said clearly there now, I fully, fully support our neutrality. It has served us well, absolutely support it. But what I'm saying is, should we have to ask Russia or China or the US or any other country that's on the UN Security Council, they have a veto. Should we have to get their permission so that we can send our peacekeeping forces on peacekeeping missions? For example, if we were in the situation where we had to send peacekeepers to Ukraine, Russia could veto that initiative.
So could the US.
Yeah.
The US have vetoed the UNIFIL forces in the Lebanon. Mm. And so the UNIFIL forces have to withdraw in a year's time. What we need is reform of the UN.
But it's not happening, Catherine. That's the problem. And I agree with you.
We have to, thank you for that. And we have to work very hard as an independent sovereign country who cherishes our neutrality to reform the UN, to use the General Assembly and to use our voice for peace in the world.
But the General Assembly can't set policies, can't make binding resolutions.
They can't send binding resolutions, but it sends a very strong message if a General Assembly passes a resolution. The UN was set up to stop wars, to stop genocide, to stop the Holocaust, to ensure that we would use international human law to guide our actions. Okay. And we, as a neutral, sovereign, independent country, should maximise our credibility.
We have been doing that, but it's not working.
Okay.
Veto is still there, and it renders it dysfunctional when there's vetoes from these very, very powerful countries.
The government has pushed with getting rid of the triple lock on the basis that Russia has misused its veto, which it has. It is only in the recent past they've highlighted the misuse of the American veto. They have never, ever sat down and explained to us what will replace that. And so where will we send our peacekeeping forces if we don't have a UN mandate? Will we send them out to Lebanon when the UNIFIL forces are gone? And will we subject them to the danger of violence and war because there's no UN mandate? Is that what you want?
Yeah, no, Catherine, I don't want to have to ask Russia for permission for anything. I don't know if you do, but I certainly don't.
Okay,
I want to move on
very quickly to cover Northern Ireland, because obviously it is very important, and I want to ask both of you the same question. How would you use your role to encourage reconciliation in and with Northern Ireland? Let's start with Heather.
Yeah, well, as you know, I live 6 miles from the border with Northern Ireland, and I have a very close working relationship with many people on the other side of the border. I got an invite to Mary McAleese's old school on the Falls Road, St Dominic's. I visited that. I spoke to the students. I spoke to the staff. I got an opportunity then to go out to Newtown Abbey. I visited Unionist community there. And, you know, they said to me, we have peace, but there's still a lot of division in Northern Ireland. And I feel that I am uniquely placed to extend that hand of friendship, to have those conversations and to build on the work that Mary McAleese did in terms of building bridges. So I have a unique and a deep understanding, and we need to build trust in Northern Ireland because there's a lot of mistrust there, and we need to also educate people right across this country on the different traditions that we have.
Okay, Catherine, as President, how would you encourage reconciliation?
I think the Good Friday Agreement has set the framework and the various cross-border infrastructures that have been set up are working very well. In addition, the Article 3 of the Constitution sets out that it's the firm will of the Irish people, with consent and with respect for all diversity and all different communities, that we would have a united Ireland. I think we need to prepare for that. The government needs to prepare for that. And there was a cross-party committee that said, ask the government for a green paper and to set out steps in relation to a unit. That hasn't happened, unfortunately.
Yeah, but as President,
I will continue to do and build on what I've done to be a voice, to open up the Auras to communities of all sides. Okay. The first visit I will take will be up to the north. I've already been up there in many capacities on a personal level and also as chair of the Irish Committee. I visited communities on both sides of the divide. And just one last thing, I met with Ireland's Future, the civic engagement group on the ground, with Senator Francis Black.
Okay.
Wonderful work going on in terms of zoning in on the similarities we have rather than divisions.
Okay, well, with similarities rather than divisions, we'll end that debate. Catherine Connolly, Heather Humphreys, thank you both very much indeed for taking the time. And of course, to repeat, Paul Murphy did not lock Joan Burton into her car, as was suggested.
He didn't let
earlier.
Her out of it.
He was found not guilty of false imprisonment. We'll have some post-match analysis after this break.